This summer, for the first time in a century, the Olympic Games will return to Athens, where the tradition was born. While the Greeks are justly proud, we really have a French aristocratic dreamer to thank for those goosebumps we get every 4 years as the athletes stride into the Olympic Stadium. The Olympics had been moribund for 1,500 years before Pierre de Coubertin resurrected them because he thought French men had become too effeminate. I'm Sarah McConnell, and today on With Good Reason, the birth of the modern Olympics. Later on today's program, Robert Case of Old Dominion University charges that commercialism and corruption have already killed the Olympic spirit and may sound the death knell for the games themselves. But first, a case could be made that the modern-day Olympic Games came about as a result of one man's desperate attempt to reinvent French masculinity after the country's defeat by the Prussians in 1870. Longwood University French scholar Wade Edwards says Pierre de Coubertin believed the French lost that war due to the soldiers' lack of vigor. Why do you say that this man named Pierre de Coubertin was the father of modern Olympics? He's French.
He's French of all things, and a lot of people find that ironic that the Frenchman of all people was in charge of resurrecting an international Olympic movement.
Why ironic that he'd be a Frenchman?
Because Frenchmen are so unathletic. Frenchmen are perceived to be people who aren't interested in sports, people who, as a nation, aren't to the same level as the British, the Americans, or the Germans.
What about the Tour de France?
The Tour de France came after the Olympics, actually. But it is true that the French do love their cycles, their bicycles. Sporting events where you're competing against yourself are interesting for Frenchmen. Sporting events where you're bloodying your opponent is not necessarily interesting for a Frenchman.
So do you think this aversion to group sporting events and manly tests in sporting combat goes back a long way for France?
I think it does, at least through the 19th century, if not earlier. Well, we can think of Louis XIV, the Sun King, where he's standing with a big wig, high-heeled shoes. He has his furs on. He has a pinky ring. He doesn't look very manly, as we would consider manliness to look today. Whereas we might compare that to something we would see for Americans, a cowboy, for instance. There's a contrast in public perception of Frenchmen versus Americans.
Tell me something then about Pierre de Coubertin and what had motivated his interest in resurrecting the modern Olympics as we know it now.
He was a baron, Baron Pierre de Coubertin. He was born in the mid-19th century. His dates, for anyone interested, is 1863 to 1937. He had lots of money and had no idea what he wanted to do with his life. After the Franco-Prussian War in 1870, France was turned upside down. It became a republic so that the aristocracy did not have the cachet that it had during the empire. And so Coubertin was young. He was in his 20s, and he needed to decide what to do with his life. He was interested in sports. He was interested especially in British ideas of sports. He had read a book called Tom Brown's School Days, very influential for British young boys, and it became interesting for Coubertin as well. He loved the idea that sports could liberate the mind, that sports could complete the man, complete the boy who would complete the man. He eventually tried to start a movement where he could introduce physical education into French schools. French schools were often in big cities. They had no parks around them, no way to have a recess. They were hyper-intellectual institutions. The British student was often let go and just allowed to run and play. And French society didn't quite understand the need for play. So he wanted to bring this to French schools. It didn't really work so well. So he set off to sort of find his own way in Britain, in the States as well. He toured American colleges to find out how sports played a role in education.
He admired the English. Did he admire Americans?
Absolutely. Coubertin liked to be linked with Teddy Roosevelt and everything that Teddy Roosevelt stood for. He was a war hero. He was a rough rider. He was a cowboy. He was a politician. Teddy Roosevelt was the ideal man for Pierre de Coubertin. And I think as he concentrated on forming the Olympics, he wanted to make French men into Teddy Roosevelt, or the ideal that Teddy Roosevelt represented. People who were successful in war, people who were evidently virile, manly, muscular. These are all images that we don't have of the French in the 19th century. And Coubertin wanted to change that. He wanted to make French men more virile.
What else was going on in France psychically at that time? What was the mood of the nation?
Coubertin grew up influenced by the defeat of the French by the Prussians in 1870. The Franco-Prussian War was a huge, catastrophic defeat for the French. The government of France during this time was an empire led by Napoleon III, a leader who was mocked by everyone. He was the nephew of Napoleon Bonaparte. And so the war happened very quickly. It was a decisive victory for the Germans. They wound up taking Alsace and Lorraine, and the two provinces on the east side of France became part of Germany again. And Napoleon III was taken prisoner by the Germans.
What else contributed to sort of the nationwide perception of itself as a country past its most glorious years?
Right. Besides the quick defeat of its government, there was the Industrial Revolution happening at the same time, so that ideas of what was considered work were changing. Ideas of what was considered family were changing. Men were working in factories alongside women. Women were getting more opportunities outside the home. And so gender roles were changing at this time as well. The birth rate was falling, and this was huge in France, especially because the birth rate of the Germans was not. And so not only were they losing men in war, but they were not reproducing them. They were not having sons. And interestingly, the idea that when a man produced a male offspring, it was reflected on his virility. In other words, a virile man produced sons and a non-virile man produced daughters.
Do you think it's fair to say that there really was a kind of national perception of more effeminate men in France than neighboring nations?
I think so. And we see some of that in the Olympic motto that Coubertin came up with. Situs altius fortius. Higher, faster, stronger. This is what he wanted French men to be. He wanted them to be higher, faster, and stronger. He wanted them to be better men.
Just because he wanted that doesn't mean that the French were necessarily typically effeminate by our standards.
Right. So with the Franco-Prussian War and the defeat, the decisive defeat for the French, it became clear that the French were not warriors. They were not good at fighting. And with the decline in the birth rate, it almost seems as if they weren't good lovers either. There was nothing good to be said about French men at this time.
They were smart. They were philosophers.
They were smart. Absolutely. The French were intellectuals. This is the stereotype. The cultural stereotype is that the British were men. The British were rugby players. And the French, you know, stayed in their little schools and wrote poetry. So it's not, that's the cultural stereotype that sort of serves as an umbrella for the beginning of the Olympics. And this is what Coubertin was trying to counteract in some ways.
How successful was he in turning this image around in France?
I don't think he was very much at all. It still hasn't changed to this day. Certainly there are French rugby players now. There are French soccer players. They just won the World Cup a few years ago. The French are athletic, but for some reason, we don't think they are. They don't stack up to the cowboy image that we have of Americans. For some reason, the French are still effeminate in our eyes. There is no French Arnold Schwarzenegger. There is no French cowboy. There is no French.
Of course, they would
man.
Say, "Thank God."
Thank God, they would say, "Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely." But it just seems that the French idea of masculinity is not the same as the American idea of masculinity.
What mood did this create among the French in the decades after?
It was a huge defeat for them, and for people like Coubertin, it was considered an emasculating defeat as well. He wanted to resurrect the Olympic athlete as a way to rebronzer la France, was his catchphrase, as a way to rejuvenate the French people. It's funny because a lot of it is just happenstance that it all worked out the way it did, I think. other countries had called for a rejuvenation of the Olympic movement. They were Olympic Games, in quotation marks, in other countries where they had athletic contests among people of different regions.
Which countries, for instance?
Scandinavia, especially. In Greece itself, they were staging Olympic Games.
What was there about Scandinavians that was particularly attached to gaming in this regard?
Scandinavians, along with the Germans and the Czechs, understood the importance of physical education as a component of education for young people.
How hard was it for him to enlist the support of other nations to actually get this thing off the ground in 96?
Yeah, he was very crafty. He was very crafty, very charming. And they were all, you know, upper class, rich men who had leisure, who had time, who had money to participate in things like yachting and equestrian activities and events that could have an international flavor to it.
And surrogate war.
And surrogate war, absolutely. I mean, the idea that the Olympics could supersede war, it comes from ancient Greece. You know, the Olympics, wars were halted so that the Olympic Games could go forward in ancient times. That, in the modern era, is not the case at all. The Olympics are often sacrificed for war, but the idea that there could be an international peace achieved through games eventually became part of Coubertin's plan. I don't think it was there at the beginning.
So why the Olympic Games? How did he choose that as a vehicle? And what had he learned about the Olympic Games that made this something so appealing to him?
People were interested in antiquity. People were interested in Greece. During this time in the 1870s, the Europeans discovered, again in quotes, discovered the site of ancient Olympia, which was purportedly lost to the outside world. The Greeks always knew where Olympia was, and they find it funny that the outsiders had to discover it. You know, all they had to do was ask, they said, and we could tell you exactly where it was. But they unearthed a temple of Zeus in ancient Olympia, and finally could pinpoint the precise location of ancient Olympia, which is where the ancient Olympics were staged. And so Hellenism was everywhere. It was the idea of the heroes from ancient Greece. You know, the urns that we see today with the discus throwers. All of this is sort of coming back to popularity in the 19th century, exactly when Coubertin is interested in bringing back the Olympic Games.
So it finally goes forward. Where do they hold the first few Olympiads?
Well, the first one fortunately happened in Athens in 1896. The hero of that first Olympics was a Greek runner who wound up winning the marathon in the stadium in Greece. And so the Greeks had their national hero. Coubertin had his international heroes, and it was a huge success. And they decided right away that the next one should happen in 4 years in Paris. In 1900, during the Paris Expo. That decision did not go well with the Greeks, who lobbied for the longest time that the permanent site for the Olympic movement should be in Athens.
I can see that.
That we should keep it in Athens?
Maybe.
I think so. It would lose some of what it has now, in that it would lose some of its international flavor, that, you know, the Olympics in some ways makes the city that it's in. Well, then in 1904, it was supposed to come to America, in part because of the influence of Teddy Roosevelt, who was president at that time. They had decided to bring it to America, which was in some ways isolated from the rest of the world at that time. That was the least attended Olympics, the third in 1904. There was another Olympics in 1906. Eventually came back to Athens in 1908, and then London in 1912, and eventually Stockholm in 1916. And all of those Olympics were, if not disasters, they were nothing that would lead us to think that the Olympic movement would evolve into what we have today. They were little athletic competitions. Although many countries would go to them, it did not gain the international support, and it didn't captivate the international audience that the Olympic movement eventually would.
So after 1912 in Stockholm, the history of the Olympics basically went where?
Well, it just sort of meandered for a while. It did end up in Los Angeles in 1932, but during the Depression. And so it didn't have the spark that it needed because it was just, no one could be interested during the Depression. It was canceled because of the First World War as well. So the Berlin was actually supposed to host the games much earlier, but because of the war, it was canceled. Eventually, it landed up in Berlin again in 1936, the height of Nazism.
We all think of it.
Of the Berlin Olympics.
The 1936 Olympics are the ones that most of us conceive of as our first memory of the Olympic Games.
Exactly.
Why is that?
the pageantry at that Olympics was higher than at any other time. Hitler was instrumental in continuing the pageantry that Coubertin had started. The political intrigue of the Olympics really takes off with Hitler, too, with Jewish athletes, with black athletes, with women athletes.
Speaking of women, had women been part of all the Olympiads from the first in 1896?
Not from the very first, but beginning with the second, beginning with the 1900 games in Paris and in St. Louis, there were women swimmers and women tennis players also. And for Coubertin, who was interested in the male athlete, especially as a way to rebronzer la France, the athlete needed to be male. The athlete for Coubertin, a female athlete, would not hyper-virilize the country the way that he had hoped originally hoped it would. With his interest in Hellenism, he was interested in Hercules as an athlete. And Hercules, we can remember, was given a choice of whether to be seduced by a woman or to concentrate on his game. And Hercules chose sport over love. That was a defining image for Coubertin, who also tried to keep men away from women, to keep men away from love and into sport.
So what was this obsession with the naked male athletes?
Well, the ancient athletes in Greece competed in the nude and often covered in olive oil. This is what he thought of the athlete, you know, a naked athlete in the prime of his form, you know, a strong, obviously virile man competing against other obviously virile men. And even though the spectators could be mixed, male and female, he thought only the runners should be male and that they should run naked.
How many gold medals did the French win in these modern Olympics?
It started out the French participation was negligible in the beginning. They did have some athletes, but they weren't the celebrated heroes of the Olympic Games. And still today, I don't know who we would consider a famous French Olympic hero.
Skiers,
perhaps. There's the ice dancing team. It's funny. It's not what we consider virile sports that the French still excel in. And I mean, some of that is an American point of view to that. What we consider manly is not what the French consider manly. But it is an interesting issue about what masculinity means to a French person versus what it means to an American.
So do the French now embrace the Olympics?
They do as much as anyone else, I think. It's still a, you know, Olympic heroes are Olympic heroes, whichever country they come from. And it's a source of pride for the French when they can beat other countries in any athletic competition, certainly in the soccer. But any Olympic hero is still an Olympic hero.
Do you like the Olympics?
Oh, of course I do. I like the Olympics. It's hard to watch the Olympics in this country if you're interested in the real ideal of the Olympics. In this country, we're very focused on only American athletes. And so the coverage that you see on television is very nationalistic, say. It's very chauvinistic, the coverage we see on American television. And so if you're interested in athletes from other countries, it's very hard to find in this country. But sure, I love the Olympics. I never miss an opening ceremony. I try not to miss the closing ceremonies. And you get caught up in the storylines that happen. It's still an ideal. Now that I've written about this and talk about this, I try to focus on a gender issue. I try to see what stories are being told about the masculinity of the athletes and the femininity of the athletes as well. I watch the Olympics for different reasons than I did as a child, but I still have that same wonder and that same imagination that I did when I first saw them.
Wade, thank you for sharing your insights with me today and with good reason.
Thanks, it's been a pleasure.
Wade Edwards is an assistant professor of French at Longwood University.